All right, let's talk about the Atlanta Braves now, who had a remarkable run to get all the way within a few outs, a few runs from going to their first World Series in 21 years. Let's bring in the general manager of the Atlanta Braves, Alex Anthopoulos, who's always kind with his time. Hey, Alex, how are you, sir?
Doing all right. Still trying to get over the series. You know, you have good days and bad, and you think you're over it, and then start to play back the series, and you're kind of going a slump again. But that's part of professional sports, and at some point, you know, we're going to have to get going and get ready for 2021, and, you know, we're already starting that process slowly today. So we're going to climb back, hopefully get on top of the mountain, and try to get back there.
I know. It is tough. Were you able to watch the game last night, or is it too painful?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We had executive meeting today, and someone asked that exact question. Kind of, you know, we were getting started, and then one of the people stopped and said, "Hey, who watched the game last night?" And everyone just kind of yelled at him, "Ah, why'd you bring that up?" and all that stuff. So it's interesting. I put my kids to bed, and I came back down, and my wife was downstairs, and the game was on. I said, "Are you really doing this?" And then I kind of sat down and I watched it. So you can't help but, you know, feel like we were right there. We had a really good club. Look, you got to win four, and we didn't do it. But, man, were we close, and we definitely, as much as I think a lot of people, not in the South necessarily, but a lot of maybe other people outside of having watched our club all the time, didn't think we had a shot. I mean, we obviously, we hung with those guys the whole way, and a few, you know, things here and there break our way, and we would have been the ones playing. But, look, that's sports, and they're an unbelievable team. And, you know, it is a good feeling that we're in a position now that we should hopefully, you know, you can't expect to do it every year, but we're hopefully going to be built to be in a position to do it.
We saw time and time again in that series that they're kind of like Jason in Friday the 13th. You can't kill them. But did you feel, yeah, Alex, after game four, when Bryce did what he did against Kershaw, okay, we got him?
Man, I got to tell you, so, one, what Bryce did, I think everyone, that was just awesome.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Travis d'Arnaud today, and we were just, you know, talking about all kinds of stuff, and I was talking about the young starters and so on. He knows, obviously, he's gotten to know them really well, and when Bryce came up, he's like, man, that guy's not scared of anything. And he just attacked, and he pitched so well. But, look, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you, you go up 3-1, your mind starts to wander. You start thinking, wow, you play the World Series. You're constantly, when you're going through this stuff, you're getting text messages and emails all the time. During the game, after the games, before the games, good luck. Sorry, you know, and then obviously when things don't go well, you know, it's like someone passed away in your family. You're getting a lot of keep your head up and chin up, and things are going to be better and great run and all that kind of stuff. But look, you go up 3-1, you know, you still have to win the fourth game, but we felt like we had three shots to do it. And, you know, that was a little bit of the discussion when we started Minter in that game. You know, the question was, going a bullpen game, and you knew you were going to have Max on full rest and Ian on full rest for 6 and 7. You know, how does the usage of the bullpen in game 5 impact potentially 6 and 7? But you can't just throw a game away and think, you know, we're going to stay away from these guys and just try to load up for 6 and 7. So Minter gave us our best chance to win. We didn't script anything beyond him. We just said, I remember Snit and I talked about it, and it wasn't, hey, so-and-so hitter, he's done. It was, he's going to go until Snit, with your eyes, you don't think he can go anymore. He tells you he can't go anymore. And I think that's the way to do it. And then you adjust. And that's why the manager's in place. He's got to make those decisions. He's got to observe the game. And he makes the call. So that was the only script we had for that game, that he was going to start and go as far as he could as long as he was doing well.
Well, and we talked about that, Alex, on Friday on our show here, saying, not knowing what the world to expect from AJ Minter, and we certainly could have predicted what the heck he did. My God, people would have thought we were crazy if we thought he was going to do what he did. But it's like, all right, worst case scenario, they lose game 5, come back, Max and Ian in 6 and 7. All right, you still feel good about it. But again, and we saw it again even last night, you just can't stop that lineup, and they're just, I mean, that game 7 and the intensity of those at bats, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. And you got to give them credit for that, don't you?
No doubt. I mean, that's, I think, like you hit on the head. That lineup, I don't think it's fair to expect, no matter how good your bullpen or you believe your bullpen is, to hold a 1-run lead for 6 innings or 5 innings. That's, you need to add on every time you have a chance to add on. And we can go through bases loaded, nobody out, second, third, nobody out.
Yeah.
Obviously some of the, some of the base running with the tag up play and so on. And look, all those players involved were great for us. They're a big part of the reason that we were in the position in the first place. So, but when you have a chance to add on, you have to add on. And, there's a multiplier effect to that, right? Is, when you're running yourself out of innings, the reliever that was in there would have potentially stayed in longer. Maybe we would have got to that reliever, that reliever's in trouble. We would have got to him a little bit more. That impacts their ability to pitch the next inning and impacts their bullpen for the next game and all those things. So that lineup is unbelievable. They're very deep. You have guys like Cody Bellinger, MVP's hitting sixth. And we were right there with these guys, basically, other than the blowout game. We were right there with them the entire time. And for me, in game seven, I thought that the Turner at bat against Anderson was unbelievable. He got two quick outs, maybe three. He went Betts, Seager, may have been three. He threw about three total pitches and got two outs. And then Turner came in and he grinded him. And they scored all those runs with two outs. But that, for me, was a key at-bat to the game. And obviously the Hernandez at-bat against A.J. Manter was unbelievable. He was fouling stuff off, change-ups, curveballs, fastballs. Mm-hmm. He had an unbelievable at-bat. And the one mistake that A.J. made, his stuff was very good. He obviously hit the home run. So, Martin the same way. But it was a great series. I think everybody that watched was impressed with the ball club and know that we were right there. We didn't get it done. They absolutely deserve to win. But it does give us a lot of confidence going forward.
And Alex, people are going to maybe sneer at a comment that you or Snit made yesterday or that I've talked about on this show over the last 3 days about how this series and this experience in the last 12 games is going to help these young kids moving forward. And you know them a lot better than I do, but I know a lot of these kids, and there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to put this in their memory bank and use it even in a series in mid-May next year. This is going to help them grow to get to where they want to be. Don't you agree?
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I understand fans are upset. You want to win. Unfortunately, I'd rather not have to learn this way. You learn from failing, right? You learn from your experiences. You learn from everything. So look, we didn't want to fail. I wish there's some other ways for us to learn, but I can tell you when we got back to the playoffs for the first time in 2018 and we're playing in Dodger Stadium, there was a happy to be there. I thought there was definitely a different feeling in the clubhouse. I don't know if it was being nervous or whatnot. It just didn't feel right. It felt off being in LA. They hadn't been there before. And, there was so much talk about, well, Max Fried, he's a young guy. He's starting game one of the postseason for you. How's he going to handle it? Well, I didn't view it as how old he was. I viewed it as this is his third time in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And the experience is big. And the fact that Bryce Wilson got to experience that and Ian Anderson got to experience that, there's no doubt that's going to help them. Anybody that does any type of work, whether you're a general manager or a radio broadcaster and so on, your first year, you're going to have some ups and downs, but you should be better your second year after having gone through it. So all these guys that got a taste of it for the first time, they're going to be that much better for the whole experience. And I can tell you, guys like Sandoval, he didn't play much, but the feedback I was getting from our players, guys like Danby Swanson, were telling me how unbelievable he was on the bench, the energy, everything that he was doing. Our coaches were saying the same thing. It's not going to show up in the box score, but his experience and everything that he'd gone through, it helped. It helped the dynamic. It helped the mix. So there are always going to be 29 clubs that are upset at the end of each year and only one that's truly satisfied. And that's just the reality of sports. But once you get over it, you do have to try to look at a glass half full and how do you build on it and how do you get better?
Alex Anthopoulos, the Atlanta Braves general manager, is our guest here on the program. Alex, I wrote an article a little bit earlier today, and I'm going to go through some of these things to kind of lead up. It's going to be a kind of a long way to get to a short question. But let's go through real quick, and I'm just going to spout them out pretty as quickly as I can, how this rotation fell apart. I don't know if there's any other way to say it. Felix Hernandez opted out. Mike Foltynewicz, one game, 3.1 innings, six runs, he was gone. Mike Soroka, hurt August 3rd, out the rest of the season. Sean Newcomb, ERA, 11.20 in four games, he was gone. Cole Hamels, one game mid-September, 3.1 innings, that was it. Kyle Wright, 7.20 ERA in his first four starts, came back from the alternate camp, had a tough start first time out, then a good three starts, but that was it. Touki Toussaint, 7.52 ERA in five starts. One good start against Toronto, great start against Toronto, and then totally lost it his next three starts. Robbie Erlen, ERA of 8.15 in five starts. Tommy Malone, ERA of 14.90 in three starts. Huascar Wainoa, 8.53 ERA in five starts. Much better in the bullpen, 2.0. Josh Tomlin, ERA of 6.33 in five starts. 2.95 in the relief outings. That's 11 pitchers and 11 almost different storylines that when you put it together, I don't know what else you can ask, but what in the world were the Braves doing in the playoffs because of what happened with that rotation? Have you ever seen anything historically, Alex, like that?
No, I mean, there was no doubt. That was just, like you said, it all fell apart. There's no doubt the offense and the bullpen saved us, carried us. It was eye-opening to me. There's different ways to win and build clubs. And, you know, you realize the importance of a deep bullpen and a good bullpen and a good offense. And that allows you to do some things. And again, I haven't taken a look at this, but you know, one of my people on the staff told me, he said we were seventh in ERA in the National League. So I haven't taken a look at it and confirmed it, but that shocks me that we're, you know, and that's, he said, with all those rough performances, and there was a lot of them. And look, we cycled through a lot of guys and we churned through a lot of guys, right? And normally when guys are performing that poorly, there's only so many starts that they're going to make. But, you know, I think, again, with the bullpen and the offense, and then we had guys that peaked at the right time. And, you know, that's really what it comes down to come postseason, right? Kyle Wright was throwing a lot better. Bryce Wilson was throwing a lot better. Ian Anderson obviously wasn't part of the team at the beginning of the year. And obviously the bullpen was pretty strong the entire time. So, you know, that was just one of those things that we had guys step up. And, you know, everyone talks about short-term deals and we only like to do short-term deals. You know, it's not a rule. There's just been so much young talent here that we need to be patient and take our time and let these guys emerge. I got asked about Bryce Wilson a ton at the trade deadline. Now, for a bunch of rentals and so on, but he was the asking price a lot of time for guys that we're going to have for 2 months. And it would have been easy to say, look, I don't know if he's going to get it. He's struggling and so on, but he's a strike thrower. He's got power stuff. He's still very young. They were doing fantastic work with him at the alternate site, and he was getting better and better and better. And you know, I'm glad we ultimately did it and we stayed patient. I know it's hard sometimes for a fan base to go through that, but with what he did for us in the NLCS, anybody we would have traded for, that's what we would have looked for, a start like that. And it worked out. And look, obviously, we didn't know what to expect. We knew the talent was there, but he stepped up, and there's certainly upside for him. And you know, Max Fried's the same way. Took him a while to finally emerge. His minor league performance was never stellar, but he always had tremendous stuff and good makeup. So, you know, this organization obviously went through a lot of pain, a lot of losing, a lot of high draft picks, a lot of tough trades. I wasn't here for any of those, but everybody from the scouting departments, the player development departments, the ownership front office, a lot of people endured a lot of pain, and the fans specifically, having to watch the product day in and day out. And they stuck with it, and they didn't lose their nerve. And, you know, the worst thing I can do as general manager is get impulsive and not be patient and not be willing to take the bullets and all those things, because you're ultimately doing what you think is the right thing. And I think all the work that's been done, which I've said many times, has been fantastic. I think it's finally starting to bear fruit, because this is about hopefully going on a sustained run and not having to go through that again and not having to tear this thing down again and start from scratch and go through a rebuild. And sometimes you have to, you don't have a choice, but hopefully with this organization and the way we're positioned, we can be in a spot that we're contending year in and year out.
Alex, I admit that around the trade deadline, you took a few bullets on this show. I'd be lying if I said otherwise for me
fans. I totally get it. Yeah, that's just reality. I'd say this, Bill, too. That's part of being a general manager, no matter who. I can guarantee you, John Schultz is a Hall of Fame executive, one of the best that ever did the job. Pat Gillick's a Hall of Fame. I can guarantee you those guys have taken more bullets than anybody in their careers. But at the end of the day, if you're going to have success, that's part of the job, no matter who you are. And I'm a fan of the other sports teams in the city. I love the Atlanta Hawks. I follow the Atlanta Falcons as well. I get impatient. I want trades. I want them to do things. I don't have access to all the information.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, but that's part of being a fan. And you can never be offended by it. You can never take it personally. You have to understand that comes with the territory no matter what. and you will make mistakes, and you will be criticized for it, rightfully so. And when you do well, you won't get criticized. So just be right more than you're wrong, and you should be fine.
Well, and there's no doubt, and I know from being around enough of how difficult it is to make trades, especially when teams are asking for young pitching. But, you know, the fear was not knowing, of course, what Ian Anderson was going to do or Bryce Wilson in a game four of the LCS. All right, if Alex doesn't get somebody, and you hate to say anybody, but if you don't get somebody else, can this work in the postseason? And you had to wonder about that, too, after not getting anybody besides Tommy Malone, right?
No doubt. So Tommy Malone, obviously, which clearly did not work out, that'd be a polite way to say it. You know, that was, we had a need that day, that Sunday. We didn't have anybody to start. Noah was lined up, but he wasn't stretched out. Our bullpen was in rough shape. And we needed to get somebody there. And that wasn't for us a trade deadline. We needed some bodies. We wanted, there was many times where we did not want to bring up some of the young guys, whether it was a Bryce Wilson or Kyle Wright, because we didn't want to disrupt what they were working on and what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And there's times these guys are working on things, and then you call them up, and they can't work on things at the big league level. You're trying to win games, and if that means they feel like to get out of an inning, they can't command their fastball, and the only thing they can get over is their curveball, their slider, and they have to throw 20 of them in a row, they might do that because they have to be accountable to the fans, to the media, to their teammates, and to winning the game. And if they're down there in Gwinnett, they can work on things. I saw Kyle Muller throw an inning of just changeups just to work on it down there, and just so he could see that he can get guys out. Mm-hmm. And he's got a tremendous fastball, and his sliders come a long way. But he can now incorporate that and not worry about it, not have the scrutiny. And having Kyle Wright have three starts down there and let him work on things and work on his command and do those things, and letting Bryce mix the four-seamer and the two-seamer and work on his changeup and being able to refine that was big. So there were times when we were leaving the Malones or the Erlins or all these guys, they were buying time for some of these other kids. Mm-hmm. I know that's tough as a fan. You know, you're still trying to win at the same time. But I guess I would say this. At the trade deadline, we felt like the only true impact starter available, because the other guys, you know, some of the other guys that were talked about being traded didn't get traded. But Mike Clevinger clearly was the number one impact guy. Mm-hmm. Our thought was, whoever we trade for, who do we feel confident will be a slam dunk playoff starter for us? And with some of the other names that were out there or could have been had or got moved, we weren't completely convinced with the strides that some of the young starters were making and could continue to make that they would be a significant upgrade, if an upgrade at all, on top of the young assets that we would have to send out the door long term. And look, that doesn't mean we're going to be right, but that's ultimately what we had to decide. It wasn't, are we getting someone just make starts during the season? Because we felt pretty confident about getting in the playoffs. It's who are we for sure going to give the ball to in a playoff start? And the bar for us was pretty high because we did think some of the young guys could start to peak at the right time.
Well, there's no doubt. It was a tremendous run for Wright to do what he did in three starts. And I want to ask you one more thing about those pitchers before we kind of look ahead. You know, everybody was kind of amazed that Ian Anderson came up and did great. Well, I mean, you know, Alex, he had 377 and a third innings of uninterrupted development, and he would have been pushing 500 if he had been in a minor league season this year by the time you guys brought him up in August. Kyle Wright, Bryce Wilson, for the last couple of years, obviously they've been up and down in the minor leagues. With what success Wright and Wilson had late in the year, have they kind of gotten over that hump where they may feel more confident that they're ready to stick compared to being on a little bit of a yo-yo and can be more like what Anderson is and more fully prepared to be big league pitchers now, in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt. We know, I was talking about this with some of our staff, we know these guys are in such a better position going into 21 than we were coming into 20. We were optimistic and excited about them, but they took a step this year. There's absolutely no doubt about it. They had success during the season, at the end of the season, like you talked about. They both had individual success in the postseason. Kyle obviously did not have a good start against L.A., but he had a really good start against Miami. And Bryce had a fantastic start against L.A. And those are things that they can take with them. So the biggest challenge we have is, if we weren't contending, and this all started in 2018, when I got here, a lot of young talent, team had lost 90 games 3 years in a row. We didn't add anybody other than we traded Matt Kemp, And we added Anibal Sanchez in the middle of spring training and guys like Flaherty and so on. But it was just, let's let these guys go out and play. Let's evaluate. Let's give them at bats. Let's give them innings. Let's maybe tweak some things from a defensive standpoint. Let's make us a stronger defensive club. That was absolutely a priority. Maybe do a little bit more on the positioning and the R&D side and some of our prep and our advance. And the first month, we started having some success. And I think Mike Soroka had only made 4 starts in Gwinnett at the time. But we looked like we were a contending club. And I remember talking to Snit and Chuck Hernandez. We were on the road, and we needed a starter against the Mets. And they were in first place. And I remember telling them, guys, you know what? I know it's only a month into this, but I actually think we have a chance to make the playoffs. Maybe we should go with Soroka. And they were totally on board with it, you know, thinking there's no way we'd call him up after 4 starts. But we had a need, and we were contending. If we were not contending and we were still rebuilding and scuffling, mm-hmm. we would have given Soroka more time. And yeah. I wasn't here when Andrelton got called up, but he got called up at A-ball, I think. And
yep.
Max Fried was called up in 2017, I believe, at it, and he wasn't performing well. And even Bryce Wilson, when we called him up, we felt we had a chance to win the division. They were big games. He gave us the best chance to win that game against the Pirates. So mm-hmm. ideally, you can treat him like Anderson, leave him down there. You know, we talk about guys being undercooked. So you allow them to just sit there and bake and cook and be ready. And that's the ideal scenario. It does get accelerated where, you know, for lack of a better term, you start to microwave these guys when you have a chance to win. And that's always a challenge to balance both things.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And right now, I'm sure you know that the fans, when they ride out Mike Soroka, Max Fried, Ian Anderson, Kyle Wright, and Bryce Wilson, are salivating a little bit. Are you?
I'm definitely excited about what they can be. I think, you know, Greg Popovich, obviously everyone knows, the coach of the Spurs, he talks about, I've mentioned this before in other interviews, he talks about appropriate fear, and having appropriate fear of, you know, your opponent, and also just allows you to not be complacent and always be on your toes. So as much as we love those guys and the upside and everything that they can be, you know, we haven't seen them, other than Fried, really, and Soroka, we haven't seen any of those remaining guys stick in a rotation from mm-hmm. for 6 months, stay healthy and go through all those things. And look, Ian's look great, and his demeanor and everything is fantastic, but you know, the league's going to adjust to him. They're going to know more about him. You know, Bryce has really pitched well at the end of the year, but you still need to have that depth, because you know that regardless of the 5 you think you're starting with, someone's going to get hurt, someone's not going to perform, and you're going to need more. And a guy like Anoa threw the ball well at times, but he was inconsistent with his strike throwing. And then other guys like Davidson as well. But, you know, we don't know yet how the offseason is going to look in terms of payroll and things like that. But I think if we could add to the rotation just to protect ourselves and have that depth, and then continue to give those guys time to continue to get better. But long-term, we're very excited about how deep they are. And beyond that, the makeup of these kids is really strong. They're good workers. They're good kids. We've got a mind for the game. So, you know, that's why we've been reluctant to just start trading all these guys away. You know, we have to be patient with these guys, because there's tremendous talent.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Well, and I think we all expect you to put a little magic on a veteran starter or two. And heck, after this year, you might want to bring in like 10 Felix Hernandez to spring training just in case, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's you know, in past years, we had pretty good success with the rotation and health and performance and so on. But obviously, look, things, like you said, you go through the list and you will always have things that don't go according to plan every year. You don't know what area it might be. One year could be the rotation. Another year could be the offense. Another year could be the bullpen. So that's why you try to insulate yourself and have as much depth as you can in all areas. And you're constantly worrying about, do we have enough players? Do we have enough starters, enough bullpen, enough, is our bench strong enough? And that, I think, is something that I learned over time. I didn't pay attention to it as much when I was in Toronto. And I think going to LA, and you see it now the resources are off the charts, but they're incredibly deep. And, you know, that's something that we've really put a premium on, and it's allowed us to navigate during the season when guys don't perform or guys get hurt. We don't have a black hole at a certain position. We have someone that can come in and hold their own and carry us and hold the position down until the guy gets back.
One final question. Usually in a normal year, you're able to sit around with your staff on an October the 21st, if you're done with this season, and say, okay, what's the status of our farm system? A little bit more difficult to answer that question this year because there's no minor league season. And you need to know that, of course, going in as far as what may be able to be filled through the farm or what your resources will be in any type of trade. What's your gut right now, Alex, on how good overall your farm system is?
You know, that's tough to say. You know, obviously there's still a lot of talent. I don't know who still qualifies and so on. Do guys like Bryce Wilson still qualify as prospects? I'm not sure in terms of, I haven't looked in terms of criteria and so on, but everyone's always going to be partial to their farm system because they know their own players well. And we had, at the alternate site, we had some really good arms come in. You know, the kid we took in the draft this year, Strider, was up to 98 with a hammer curveball. He looked unbelievable. I had my son with me for one of the games, one of the scrimmages, and he's 8. And he said, how come we don't call him up? And because he just was striking. I was trying to explain to him. He was in college earlier in the year. But, you know, I think we've got a lot of really good arms. Our position player group is really strong. Drew Waters made strides. Shea Langeliers was fantastic in camp. Michael Harris really put on a show, was fantastic in camp. And again, we have a lot of arms as well that we're pretty excited about. So, look, this farm system has been deep for a long time. A lot of high draft picks. Obviously, you know, when guys like Acuna and all these tremendous international signs and superstar impact players certainly help. But, you know, it's also been a challenge from the international standpoint. You know, we're not back full boat until, you know, January of 2022 will be the first time that we can sign guys at the same pace as all the other clubs. And that's obviously, you know, from that point, you're signing 16-year-old kids and then you're waiting another 4 or 5 years beyond that. And then, you know, what's been tough too is we're in a position to win right now. And it's tough when we've signed some free agents like Ozuna where we give up a draft pick. And it's not ideal. You'd rather hang on to the draft pick, especially with the lack of international. But you also understand we have an opportunity here to win. And you're always trying to thread the needle and balance that. And we hope to pick late in the draft every year because that means we've performed at the big level. So we're hoping we're picking 25 to 30 each year. But obviously that's going to make it more challenging. And, you know, and also when you're giving up draft picks for free agents and so on. So we're trying to balance that. I think last year, knowing that we would get a pick back for Donaldson, helped offset some of those things. But we are excited. We have a lot of talent. I think it's going to be hard to maintain a top-ranked farm for an extended period of time when a lot of these guys are starting to come up to Atlanta and Christian Pache is on his way up. And our farm system is very top-heavy at this point in time. And that's a good problem to have because that means they're close to helping the Braves. But we do like a lot of the talent that we have down below that's starting to have its way up.
Alex Anthopoulos has been our guest talking about the Atlanta Braves and the tremendous run. We should thank you, Alex, for what you did to help put this together. You and Snit did such a great job, and it's been 20 years since we had that kind of excitement in October, and I've got more gray hair because of it, so I can blame you for that. But, hey, we always thank you for your time, and we look forward to having you back on again when you re-sign Ozuna and bring in Trevor Bauer, okay? So just schedule it right now.
I'm going to put it down. You could put it in the calendar. So,
okay.
All right, Bill. Well, thanks very much, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Okay, Alex. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Alex Anthopoulos, our guest, talking a little Braves baseball.